I had a chance at Sony to listen to the record. I don't often do that, where you know you're going to listen to this record and then someone's going to open the door and they're going to say, so what did you think? That makes me very uncomfortable, but I had a chance to do this knowing I was going to see you. And I thought, yeah, what the heck? So I've listened to the record once, and those big amps and it sounded so, so good.
Oh, good, yeah.
And when I walked away, when I left that room, the first thing I thought was, like, I had just listened to something that I'd heard before, but I don't mean that in any way like this been done before, but just that, like, I met an old friend but was a brand new person, you know?
Yeah, I know. A couple of my friends have been saying that as well. They say, like, it's very familiar. It's almost like I know these songs, or it's almost like I know what you're going to say next, but not in a bad way. It's sort of like, wow, it's really a refreshing thing to hear from some people, especially the people I trust, you know, because you know, when you put something out there in the world, there's all these words you kind of don't want to hear and you hope people don't say.
Okay, what give me one.
Oh, man, I don't know. There's so many words I don't like over the years. Like, I don't like anything that starts with R-E, like retro, reinvent, recreate, or I hate that. It's always like living in the past, copying, emulating. I hate, you know, all those. Collaboration. I hate the word collaboration. Like, it's like if I produce a record with Tom Jones, I'm not collaborating with Tom Jones. You know, it makes you think like you're up in a cabin writing together. I mean, when I'm, you know. But so, anyways, to put something out there like that, I love when you hear different things from different people. Then you know you getting somewhere. If you hear the same thing from everybody, if everyone says, oh, this album sounds like the Kinks, this album sounds like the Kinks, this album sounds like the Kinks, they're like, damn, man.
I didn't mean to do that.
No.
But it was like, and my favorite records are often those records where you all of a sudden think, this record was always here, right? You know that?
That's,
you know,
good,
that feeling?
Yeah.
You must have a few of those.
Well,
right?
You know, Loretta Lynn's album sounded like that when we were finished with it. And while we were making it, you know, we were kind of like to each other, like, man, this sounds kind of classic. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like this was a record Loretta made in 78 or something.
What about growing up, like just listening to records? Can you think of things that, like, you remember hearing and you go, oh?
Yeah, like Johnny Cash's songs, like, you know, when were they recorded? Right. I mean, who cares? I mean, so was it 1949 or 1963? I mean, so it was like they're just there.
Yeah.
They were always there. You know, that's see, sometimes you get there with music and you just cross over that line and it becomes something that sounds like it's always been there. That's a good feeling. So that's really a heavy compliment.
It really is. It was a good feeling. And I also was listening, and we'll talk about the players too, because I don't really know all the players who are on this record. I didn't have liner notes when I was listening to it.
Boy, I want to get thrown against the wall.
Was it something we said? So there were moments in the record, and I don't know titles very well. Is it Freedom 21?
Freedom at 21. Yeah.
Freedom at 21. And tell me if this is possible in the song, because I this is coming from memory and wanting to listen. But there's like a hesitation going on with you and the drummer.
Yeah.
That it's almost like a hiccup. So would that be the song?
Yeah, it is, and it's an echo. It's a tape echo that she had played the drums. Carla Azar had played the drums.
And Carla Azar is...
She's a drummer. She's in the female band I'm playing with on tour right now. And she was also the drummer in a band called Autolux.
Oh, yeah.
She is the drummer in the band Autolux. She's great. I've known her for years. So,
cool band.
Yeah, and she played the drums on that track. And it was a simple beat, like... something like that, and we put a tape echo on it while we were doing a mix back playback, and I put a tape echo on it, and it became, it became that kind of thing, and which has been great, like, live, trying to do this live with the two bands. The two drummers are trying to emulate the echo, you know, trying to play the echo live, which is very difficult, and they're coming up with some cool ideas for it, but I really got a lot out of that.
I was wondering if some of the interplay that I have, because there's an awful lot of interplay, awful lot of different styles on the record, and I was wondering if some of, like, when you write a song, can you think of that in advance? Do you imagine that in advance? Do you need the material to work with? Do you have it? You sort of have it in your head that you're, here's what I'm going for. Mm-hmm. I want that. Did you want that?
I try lots of different things. I'm always trying to mix up. One day while working on this album, I had six people invited, session musicians, to come in the morning. And I had absolutely no idea, like no song, nothing.
Love that.
And I went in the room and pretended like I had a song. I sat down at the piano and I played like a C chord, and then I played the F, and then I just, I gotta write something right now, right now. Because these aren't friends of mine. They're studio session musicians waiting for me to play. tell them what to play. And so that forced me to do something I would never have done. And I would come up with things. And I would use techniques like that too. Or the next day I would say, oh, it's going to be all female musicians tomorrow. Let's see what energy that brings to the room. Mm-hmm. The day after that, let's do all male musicians and play the exact same songs that the girls did and see if anything changed.
And what'd you find in some of these instances?
All kinds of things. And you start to have to try to define what you're learning from them.
And in some ways, it could have been the same musicians on the next day that may have made a completely different record.
Yes.
But was there anything you gleaned from the male-female thing? Because you're playing with that now a lot. And I can't think of anybody else who would have had the experience to do that. Literally at the same point in their career. And all that stuff. So what do you find it?
Well, I'm just learning as a producer and an orchestrator. I guess because in the last couple of years, because of all the records I've done on Third Man, it's turned me into an orchestrator as part of my production sort of mm-hmm. problems. I've become, like I say, Wanda Jackson's record. I had like 12 people in a room together playing live. I sort of thought I had done that before. I'd never really done that, where I go out into the room and say, okay, the horns don't come until this section. You guys harmonize with the clarinet and the fiddle comes in at the intro. I'm like, you know, I've never actually done this with a band where I'm actually telling them what notes to play and how to harmonize. So without that, those 45s and that Wanda record, I clearly couldn't have done this record of mine.
And the confidence to go up to tell somebody who's been playing horn for 15, 20 years, that's when you come in for someone who doesn't play horn and someone who's never arranged.
Yeah.
Does that come like in the shower in the morning? Does it come in the moment when you just are feeling the song? Does it?
I think what the dangerous part is that I think we do this to each other as humans. We sort of say, you don't know what you're talking about, kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. Or you don't deserve to be in the spot to tell people what to do. I think we kind of all are protective about our identities. Well, I'm a trumpet player and I'm really good at this. So don't say anything to me that takes away from that identity. But what's wrong about that is what could really happen is if you had a whole Hollywood production, you had all the crew set up, the lighting set up, and there's going to be someone robs a bank in this scene in the movie. And if the director took some teenage kid off the street and said, come here for a second, mm-hmm. direct this scene right now, what would happen?
Yeah.
He has absolutely no knowledge of lighting, camera techniques, aperture, film speed. What would he do? What would get created? I bet you something pretty interesting.
That's right. That's great. And
I
we all get locked in our boxes too.
Yeah.
And I think that really
so helped. You were saying earlier, like, what I learned, you know, from having those people in the room, you sort of learn like, okay, well, this time it's all girls in the room. How is that affecting? They're relating to each other in a different way than they would to me.
Even more specifically, in what way?
It becomes, you start compartmentalizing. You start to see different things where, this musician plays better when it was co-ed, when it was mixed together, mm-hmm. and when it became all of their own gender, they don't play as well. They're competing, you know, for the wrong reasons.
In both the male and female?
Yeah. And the funny thing about the girl idea is that, I mean, I learned with Alison Mossart in The Dead Weather, because it was hard to tell in The White Stripes, but with the Dead Weather, all it takes is one girl. I mean, you don't have to have, if you have a 20 guys in a room, you just bring in one girl and you change the entire mood and everyone plays differently. And that happened with The Dead Weather. And I think that's why we all became such tight friends and we all wrote, the four of us wrote in that mm-hmm. band, I think because of her and her attitude. So those are all the things that are interesting to play with as a producer, because it makes me do things I wouldn't normally do.
Now, I don't know. I didn't know anything going in and listening to this record. I didn't know players. I didn't know male, female.
Yeah.
So tell me about the structure of the record. Are there different bands on different songs then?
Yeah.
Is that so?
Yeah. I didn't want to play all the instruments myself. I didn't want it to be, you know, any of those easygoing things. I wanted to really shake it up. So there's a lot of people who played on it. I would call in people. Oh man, I remember that pedal steel player played on that one Chris Thiele track. He was great. Let's bring in that drummer from that Black Milk record, and I construct things for these songs I had in mind. And sometimes it would be all female, sometimes it would be all male, sometimes we'd mix them together. Mm-hmm. And so we have Pokey LaFarge in South City 3.
Oh,
they did a song called I Guess I Should Go to Sleep. That was them. It was me. They were my backing band for that song. And that felt really good. I wanted to do five more tracks with them, but they had to leave town, you know? So we've got a lot of cool things that happened that wouldn't normally have happened had I not known all these people from working on Third Man 45s. Mm-hmm.
This sort of, correct me if I'm wrong, but it feels like a record you've always wanted to make. I mean, it really feels like, even on one hand, you're saying, I couldn't have done it without any of the other stuff. But on the other hand, it feels like there's so much fun and play going on in here.
I think I came up from, a lot of growing up with a lot of Catholic guilt and a lot of punk rock hipster guilt in the later years, where I think people have thrown a lot of things on me, where I always felt like, God, I'm not supposed to, like I was saying earlier, I'm not supposed to tell the horn section what to play, or I don't want to come off egotistical or like a control freak to tell that piano player, like, change the rhythm to waltz time now because it'll make this thing happen. But now I'm in a position where I own the studio and the people are coming in to work on music. They want to make something beautiful happen, and somebody needs to direct it. And I feel like, you know, forget all that guilt, forget all that. I need these songs to be the way I exactly and I'm imagining them in my head. I don't have to worry about it being a band of guys I'm in, you know, where I'm not going to hurt anybody's ego or there's going to be something. Because my personality, just the way I speak, can sometimes turn off like other, you know.
You mean you think you're strident or you're...
Well, like, so it's like all the 45s I work on was a hip-hop record or a soul music or bluegrass or anything. The 45s that Third Man I've done produced, the ones that scare me are the 20-something white male hipsters. Like when I record with them, I get scared because I think they're gonna turn me into a villain. Like they're gonna flip this on me and I'm not gonna be able to, like, I need to keep my mouth shut and just like let them do whatever they wanna do because this is gonna turn. And so isn't that crazy? I mean, you'd think those are the people, like, those are my people, right? Or like that's where I come from. It's not, man. Those are the people I'm scared of, man. And it's so funny to, I mean, say that, like, I'm not like, this isn't, you know, counseling session. I'm just me. I was like, hey, when you talk about trying to get your ideas across, you want to be with people who know it's coming from a good place. It's not coming from an egotistical place. It's coming from a place of, what's best for the song? How can we feed the song what it needs?
I would think some session musicians are just there and they don't know what to expect.
Yeah.
But I think just different personalities. In some way, it's you telling them what to do is, which may be like that young kid off the street coming in to direct that film.
Yeah.
Is going to make something else happen and maybe really eye opening to that trumpet player is always would just do it the same way, almost like phoning it in.
Yes.
And they walk out and say, wow. He kind of told me stuff to do that. I thought he was a jerk at first or an idiot or he didn't know what he was talking about, but
yeah,
wow, that was kind of cool.
Yeah, it's nice.
And that would be the ultimate, I think, for a musician to walk in the door who's been playing.
I think a lot of guys, like, say, like union sort of session musician guys who have charts and they usually go in and they have it all set up for a certain time period, like a 3-hour block with charts and stuff. When they come and work on some stuff with me and I say, like, look, I don't have those charts. I don't have those arrangements. I want to feel what we're doing and then give you an idea of how I would like to sound. Can you guys hit me with a minor, A minor blast right here at this change? And like, you look at each other and like, yeah, okay, cool. We don't get to do this ever, so they're excited. There's a whole new energy to the zone. Like, I really like that.
So the process of recording was with two different bands and all this stuff sounds like it might have taken a really long time. I have no idea.
Because I didn't have this is the first album since the only other album I did like this was this. White Stripes album called Distill, where I recorded in my living room, and we just did it when me and Meg had time. So this was the only time I'd ever done that again, where I didn't do a block of 2 weeks or something where we're gonna get this all done, because I didn't really know I was doing a solo record. I was just recording songs. It could have been.
See, I didn't realize that. So there's lots of different styles. Mm. In that way, I could say it feels all over the map, but I'm not gonna say that because it felt really cohesive.
Yeah, you know, good. That's like, good.
All right. My corner touchstone for this record for me was Led Zeppelin 3 because you know that's a record that was very unexpected. Mm. I think from anyone who understood 1 and 2 and just knew this band as that band.
It was brave for them to do that.
It was a brave record. Well, I think this was a brave record for you to do. Mm. You know, and so many of the different styles that are going on there. It's really hard to. And then I'm just wondering. When you had, if that's what happened, if it came over like lots of different periods of time and you had these here and there, first of all, there's probably a lot of stuff that didn't get on, I'd imagine.
Yeah.
And then how do you sequence? How do you like find, how do you take the little puzzle pieces, you know?
Yeah, put it together? You just have to like, you just got to get in there and swim. There's some kind of things that I like to do that help it happen, which is what could be the first song on this record? then you find it, and then you say, like, say the last song on this record, it could only be the last song.
Yeah.
And
there you go.
And I love when something can only be the last song, because that sort of gives me my bookend. Yeah,
right.
And now I can, now I go, then it's, I go, personally, this is what I do. I mean, then I go, what would be the first song on side B, if this was a vinyl record? And that helps me have, I got end and middle, I work off those three components, and then I feed all the other pieces just fall into place after.
Is that like lyric writing for you? Do you do that? Like, mm-hmm. you know, if you mm-hmm. you have a phrase you have in mind,
yeah,
and this is the only phrase you can follow given what the music is doing, or
yeah, I attack it in 50 different ways. I always, like, sometimes it's a puzzle, sometimes it's letting everything out on the page and then chopping out the words that are making it not fit with the melody. Sometimes I write the words first, sometimes I write the music first. On this album, I made myself do things that I'd never done before. One was that there was, I'd made the mistake for years that I would have a dream of a melody or some phrase. I'd wake up in the middle of the night and I'd hum it for a second, and I'm like, I'll remember it, and I won't go back to sleep, and I totally forget it. So this time I said, if that happens while I'm working on this record, I'm gonna make myself get up and write it down, which is really, really hard to do at 5 o'clock in the morning, man. But I made myself do it, and I got two new songs out of that idea, and that's something that's, I mean, you would just never do that in the daytime. You would those melodies.
That's right. Well, although ABBA, you know, the wonderful group ABBA, one of their advices of songwriting was, like, if you can't remember it, ain't worth remembering.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that's true.
You never know, because a lot of times there's songs that I have that were, you know, maybe some songs that were considered hits of mine that I played those melodies in front of people and nobody said anything. They would say, whoa, what's that?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And, you know, that's, I always joke with Ben Swank, who works at Third Man, you know, cause he walked by. When I wrote Seven Nation Army at Soundcheck in Australia, he walked by and I said, check this riff out. And I played it for him. He goes, it's okay. And it's just like, it just shows you, like, I might have, if I had, screw it then. It's not, you never know.
Right.
You just never know.
You don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't even think that riff was that great either. I mean, so.
Yeah. The when you speaking of Third Man, I was actually surprised. You've got this label and you're putting it out on Columbia.
Yeah.
Why'd you do that?
Well, you know, Columbia to me always felt like it would be a. I'll say again, maybe that. Columbia to me always felt like a solo artist's record. I always imagine it's Bob Dylan's and Robert Johnson, mm-hmm. Frank Sinatra, and so forth. I always imagine Columbia as they're about the solo artist, or that's what they're good at. And their history is amazing. They're the first record label, the very first. They invented the album. I mean, they have an incredible history. So I always thought if I did a solo record, that would probably be a great idea to do it with them. And I just hadn't done one until now. But also Third Man, some of my friends said, why didn't you just put this out on Third Man? You have your own record label, just do it. And I think the thing is about Third Man, we can put things out on iTunes and we can put things out on vinyl, and we got those fine.
Yeah.
Well, we can produce tons of them like that. But when it comes to the actual, like, you know, if you want to put out a million CDs and sell them and get them played on the radio and even videos or whatever, if that still exists, all that kind of muscle can only come from a label like Columbia. Mm. You know, and I really didn't want to do this album a disservice and try to, I ain't got nothing to prove about being indie or anything like that. I mean, I just do what serves
the best
thing.
Music.
Yeah.
What serves the music.
Yeah.
So is, would you say that, like, from a kid, you might have always thought that you'd love to have a record on Columbia? Could it be as?
Yeah, you know, Becca and I were talking about that recently. Becca was saying something great about Columbia is that the logo of Columbia. It just always looks so official and governmental, or it's such an institution, that logo. I would say, yeah, it's incredible. And it's like a library almost. It's like a Library of Congress recordings, how they feel, mm-hmm. just to look at the packaging of them. That's what come. I mean, in a lot of ways, record labels, they are their logo. And that's what they are to people.
Yeah.
They're,
right.
The font they use is what they are to everybody.
And
Atlantic or Motown. Mm-hmm. You know, to people, that's just what that label colors, you know?
And in some ways, it's that. Right at the top of the conversation, you were talking about the punk in you and all that stuff. In some ways, the punk in you would say, I'm not going to be on that institutional thing. And in some ways, would you say it's sort of full circle, where you're sort of embracing?
Yeah. I, for one, that was one thing that never gelled with me in the punk garage rockers and all that. It was that I had nothing against the big labels. Yeah. And oh, matter of fact,
the First Class record was one of the great records of all time.
Oh, all my favorite artists are on major labels. I mean, you know, these Sex Pistols, the Ramones, Robert Johnson, they were all on major labels. But I mean, I never had a problem with that ever. And the funny thing is, as I got making records with the White Stripes with independent labels, I mean, all those indie labels ripped us off. I mean, they all did. The majors never ripped us off, you know? So that's the funny thing. I mean, people always ask me about that. I was like, look, man, if you want my honest opinion, a lot of indie record labels do a disservice to artists and claim to be championing them, but they're really, because they don't know enough about the business, or I mean most of those independent labels, they don't know nothing about mechanical royalties or how to pay their artists properly.
Not with intent.
They don't have any legal background where they would suffer if they don't do what they need to legally do. Right. I mean, if an independent record label owes you $500, what are you going to take them to court for $500? You can't really do that. You know.
So the idea of like looking at records of people who are heroes of yours, be it The Clash, be it Robert Johnson, who are all Columbia sort of artists. Mm. Could you have, first of all, ever imagined that you'd be in a position where you'd be on there? Was it a dream to ever do it, or just felt good this year when you were going to put out your record? Is it longer term, like hope or thought, or is it just like, you know what, we'll do a better service for the record if we put it out now on a big
Yeah, record. I would try. You know, like some things we thought, like I put out Wanda's Jackson's record with Nonesuch, and I thought maybe they'll help. Maybe that's the zone she needs to be in to give it some extra muscle. I think in the end it turned out that I think Third Man probably should have just done that record by itself. I mean, I don't think we sold any more copies by not just doing it ourselves, so that probably would have been better. But again, the thing, I want to try that thing with Columbia partnering with Third Man too. I mean, it's all Third Man based. I mean, they came to our world and saw what we do in our world, and they just want to help what we do with our world and make it a bigger deal. And that's really all you can ask from a record. It was make it a bigger deal. You know, I mean, look what they did. They've sold 15 million records with Adele. I mean, can you imagine if the internet didn't exist right now? I mean, what does that mean? 30 million records for Adele? That's pretty amazing, man. And they got, you know, they've always done a great job. And I think they're sort of like I said, they're kind of an institution, and I felt comfortable with me, especially because when they came to Third Man, they love music. They, you know, you could tell that the boys who work there, the girls who work there, they love music, man. I mean, and it's not business to them. They're into it. So.
Well, I can't wait for everybody to hear this record, because I'm so excited about
Thank
it.
Thank you, honestly. Man. Thanks for talking to me about Thanks. It. Thanks.
Yeah,
you bet, all right.
Cheers.
Yeah.
Everybody happy?
Ready to start rolling.